morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world.
Hello and welcome to DevelopPod, the podcast from the IATEFL Teacher Development Special Interest Group. My name is James Taylor, and in today's episode, we're going to listen to an interview that Tanya has done with Rachel Roberts. Now, she's an expert in teacher well-being and mental health. So this is the second part of our double bill on this subject. If you haven't listened to it yet, go back to the previous episode, episode 20, where we spoke to Phil Longwell. So now I'll pass you over to Tanya, who'll introduce you to Rachel.
I'd like to welcome Rachel Roberts into our virtual studio. Good morning, Rachel.
Hi. Very pleased to be here.
Excellent. We're very lucky to have you. And following on from our topic on teacher burnout and the current situation right now that a lot of people are facing, we're going to be talking with Rachel, who is an expert herself in this area. And so as we start, Rachel, could you just give us a really brief introduction to yourself and a little bit about your background, where you are now as well in your career?
Okay, yeah. So I've been in English language teaching for just over 30 years now, which is a little frightening when you put it that way. So I've worked in a variety of different contexts within ELT, so private language schools abroad. I was in Poland, Portugal, Brazil. I've also worked in the UK. I was 10 years in an FE college. Worked for universities, so doing teaching, teacher training, and then about 15 years ago I started writing as well, and I write materials, students' books, digital stuff, whatever anybody will pay me for, really. So I've been in ELT a long time. Mm-hmm. But I've also had an interest in psychology and mindfulness for quite a long time as well, which really came about as a result of my own sort of burnout experiences earlier in my career.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, I understand that you also have a lot of experience with counseling and training, some psychotherapy, Rogerian practice as well.
You've been reading my website, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So, well, basically, you know, my first experience with burnout was a long time ago now, probably about sort of 20 years ago or more. And as a result of that, I kind of realized that I needed to understand myself a bit better. So the burnout really was a combination, as it usually is, of external factors and internal factors. So by that, I mean, I was working in a context where I was doing about 70 hours a week and traveling all over the country.
70?
Yes, seriously, working weekends. Wow. It was crazy, you know, so it would not be true to say that it was all in my head. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I really needed to kind of look at, you know, how I was contributing to it myself, I think, through kind of perfectionism, you know, worrying about what people thought of me, perhaps even enjoying a little bit, feeling put upon and victim-y, you know, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And when it happened to me the second time, because I left that context, and then it happened to me again, and then I kind of really realized that I was just going to keep taking it with me if I didn't sort it out. Mm-hmm. So I trained, initially I kind of just started with an introductory course, and then I did a certificate, and I just kept getting more interested in it and ended up doing a diploma in Rogerian person-centered counseling and psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't actually do all of the practice hours because I got pregnant with my son and decided it was fine because I'd kind of learned what I needed for me. But then in more recent years, you know, I found myself being more and more drawn to working with other people in that way. Mm-hmm. And particularly kind of seeing, you know, the issues that other teachers and people working with education have. So yeah. 3 years ago, I went back and did a coaching diploma at the same place at Warwick University.
Mm-hmm. And so that kind of takes us up to the present day with you as far as mm-hmm. your current interests and your career focus. Is that right?
Yes. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm still working within ELT. I'm still writing, but I am now spending a proportion of my time working with people one-to-one. And I also have a free group on Facebook that I'm quite active in, you know, just helping people deal with the pressures of being in this business, basically.
Mm-hmm. And so that does lead me to the question, well, what are the signs then? I mean, speaking for, I think you're a great person to ask from both a personal and professional perspective, what are the warning signs of burnout? And what can we as teachers do to try to avoid it?
Well, you know, I mean, I think burnout really is about overload. And teachers tend to be people who consider themselves to be quite strong and who have like this sort of passion for what they do, you know, which is great. But it does mean that actually they can sustain pressure at a level that actually they shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And it's often the people who are kind of like the toughest, if you like, that end up going down that route of burnout, mm-hmm. because they don't look after themselves enough and they sort of don't put themselves first. They put kind of their work first, their students first, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it is really important, I think, to be aware of these signs, because the thing about burnout is it's, you know, if you heard the thing about like if you put a frog into boiling water, it'll jump out. But if you heat the water up gradually, not that I'm suggesting anybody should do this, it's a metaphor, then it won't notice it and will end up cooked. Mm-hmm. And it can be like that, that you're not really aware of how much pressure you're under, mm-hmm. until suddenly it's too much.
Well, let's think about getting up to that breaking point. So how have you noticed that those levels of stress or that aspect of burnout manifests itself?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I mean, I think there are various signs. They do vary a little bit between people, but key one is exhaustion. And I don't just mean, you know, everybody gets tired at the end of the week or what have you, but it's when you are still exhausted after you've had a restful weekend, for example, you know, when you just can't seem to kind of get that energy back again. Mm-hmm. I think that is a problem. So often it is about this sort of recovery. You know, if you either don't give yourself a chance to recover, or even if you do, you don't recover, then that's not a good sign. And that can then start to kind of impact how your brain works. And so you may get like brain fog. You just can't think straight. You forget the words for things. You go into rooms and you can't remember what you went in for. You know, I mean, everybody gets a bit of that. But if you're getting a lot, that can be a sign. And sometimes people worry that it's a sign of early dementia or something. But a lot of the time, it's just stress.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And from my own personal experience, I remember for about 2 years, I was actually living in Hastings. And I was the assistant director of studies for a really large language school in, mm-hmm. London. And those days were like 5 o'clock in the morning, because it was about an hour and 45 minute train ride each way to, mm-hmm. London. And it was such a busy school. It was so much happening every day. My first son was really young at home. So the guilt of not spending enough time with him, plus feeling like I was kind of failing at my job because it was just so, mm-hmm. busy. And I remember the day I realized that I was really at my maximum. I was sitting on the train on the way home from Waterloo Station down to Hastings, and I just started crying. Like, tears were streaming down my face, but I wasn't emotional. It was a really weird disconnect, and that frightened me. Mm-hmm. That was when I was like, this is not normal. I shouldn't just be crying on the train, unable to stop, without actually having had anything that currently made me cry. It was just that exhaustion.
Well, and just that sense of being just totally full. So very often what happens is that it's just like a really small thing that tips people over, you know, really tiny thing. And that's another sign, you know, if small things, mm-hmm. are making you cry or shout at people or want to run away and hide, then that is a sign that your cup is too full.
So how can we, well, first of all, I suppose you're saying that we need to learn to notice those signs ourselves, mm-hmm. Perhaps before we're weeping openly on a train on the way home from London.
Yes, that would be a good idea. Yeah.
But are there things that organizations, management, peers, are there any things around us that could really help in situations like this?
Well, I mean, I think definitely our employers have to be also aware of the signs So for example, I mean, another key sign is being ill all the time. And I think as managers, and I've been a manager a couple of times, you know, you're under pressure yourself. And the first instinct is probably to be annoyed that somebody is taking a lot of time off, because you have to deal with that and you have to find cover and so on. However, it could well be a sign that they are reaching breaking point, because stress affects the immune system. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you will get like cold after cold after cold. Or sometimes what happens as well is that people are fine during the term, and then as soon as they get a break, they're ill.
I've heard many, many teachers say that. Mm-hmm. So that's a sign of burnout as well.
Totally, because it's like sort of you're determined to hold it together, and then your subconscious is like, okay, you can let it go now. And then you become ill. And, you know, obviously that's not good, because you're not actually getting any quality time mm-hmm. in your holidays. And that, you know, that is another thing I think that managers need to be aware of, is are people actually taking breaks? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's, again, very easy to kind of wave off your staff on a Friday night and say, you know, have a lovely weekend and don't do any work. But if you are actually making it impossible for them not to do that work through your systems, then that doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
So I think you really do need, as a manager, to look at, you know, what you're expecting your staff to do, things like marking, report writing,
reasonable timelines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just, you know, your systems, because there are ways of marking that are less consuming in terms of time than others, you know. So planning as well, you know, can you help them to cut down on planning time in any way? Cooperative planning, or, you know, whatever. But thinking about that type of thing.
Okay. And what about we as individuals then? So if we are, say we're in a position where we're starting to realize, okay, I've hit some of those warning signs. I'm feeling tired. I'm overreacting to small issues. I've got a bit of brain fog. I can feel a lot of constriction in my body, maybe really regularly. Mm. So what are some things that we as individuals can do to be a little more proactive in coping with mm-hmm. these levels of stress?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the first thing to do if you notice that is to pull back, you know, before you do anything else, pull back and make sure that you get some more rest and that you, you know, look after yourself, because once you've noticed it, you're probably quite close to the edge. So that would be the first thing to say. And then I think you need to take, you know, a really long, hard look at what is causing the burnout. And it is very easy to kind of be, oh, you know, it's all their fault because they're making me do all of this work. And there may well be some truth to that. You know. Sure. On the other hand, how are you, you know, contributing to it as well? Mm-hmm. So are you being too perfectionist about things, for example? Do you really have to spend 3 hours planning every lesson? You know, this, you have to ask yourself some of those hard questions too. And then I think you also need to put into place, you know, some consciously some things to balance out, because stress is caused basically by two sort of main things. One is like our fear, if you like, and our anxiety. So that is kind of like, I'm not doing a good enough job. I'm going to be found out. You know, people have all this kind of imposter syndrome thing going on. Mm-hmm. So it's fear, and or it's drive, you know, like I want to be the best teacher I can possibly be. And I want to, you know, and both of those are fine in proportion. But if you've just got that going on and you haven't got anything from like the third system, which is like the parasympathetic system, which is the sort of soothing, calming, nurturing, looking after yourself, then you're going to get out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about kind of consciously making sure that those three drives are in balance.
And well, so, you know. Assuming they're not. Certainly, I think a lot of, particularly right now with what's happening.
Absolutely.
I know that definitely I'm not in balance right now. And I think a lot of people feeling a lot of pressure, a lot of sudden online learning, a lot of stress with the students, employment. People are worried about precarious employment situations as well. So when we think about that third factor, that parasympathetic, that idea mm-hmm. of needing to really pay attention to that third element, are there any kind of practical hands-on techniques or strategies or advice that you would give someone to enable them to take a little bit better care of that third aspect?
Well, it does vary a bit from person to person, because I think one of the key things that will help is kind of any activity that you really enjoy and where you're in flow, you know, and that does vary. So for some people that might be gardening, for other people it might be cooking or painting or, you know, whatever. But I think finding those things where you're absorbed by what you're doing and really sort of enjoying it, I think is a very good way of doing that. I think sleep is really important. And I think there are ways we can improve our sleep by looking at kind of our routine running up to sleep, for example. You know, if the last thing you do before you go to bed at night is looking at Twitter and, you know, reading these sort of rows or following links to, you know, scary things about what's happening, you know, obviously you're not going to sleep because you're hyping up your body, you know, so you need to have a bit of discipline, I think, about when you look at what's going on, because every time you look at the news or even kind of, you know, things on Facebook can stimulate you in that sort of fear response.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm totally guilty of those things. And yeah, that really resonates for sure. I think having really limiting the time that we spend on news broadcasts and so you're talking about the timing, which is absolutely crucial. And even maybe the amount of time that we spend on these things as well.
Yes.
And maybe switching that where, as you said, spending more time on the gardening, the cooking, the reading, the relaxation aspect. Yeah.
Totally. You know, and I think the timing is important as well. So like first thing in the morning, for example, I would definitely recommend, you know, doing a bit of exercise, doing some meditation, you know, it's something that sets the day off on a calm trajectory rather than immediately going into panic and fear.
Yeah.
And again, I wouldn't look at stuff like that, you know, before bedtime. So you can select a time. I mean, I often look at this kind of stuff. I have a break, like sort of mid-morning, you know, and then I kind of go, okay, I'm going to see what's going on in the world then, because I do want to know, you know, we all want to know. But so picking a time or a couple of times a day when you allow yourself to kind of look at this stuff, but not constant.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And so that leads me to my last question, which is actually about resources. So for those people who might be thinking, yeah, actually, I could use a bit of mindfulness, or I could use some extra support in trying to figure out how to balance my work home life better, or that the idea of balancing the drive and your own ego. Maybe ideas of perfectionism, but also that nurturing side. So can you recommend any resources that might be useful for our listeners?
Sure, yes. Well, I mean, to start with, I would certainly recommend, I mentioned my Facebook group before, and it's called Life Resourceful Lightbulb Moments, and it's free group. And it's there are about 350 educators in there. It's very supportive. Yes,
I'm one too.
Yes. You know, it's a really nice supportive group. We have, at the moment, we're having regular Zoom calls to kind of chat to each other. Got guest experts coming in. We had Amy Malloy last week doing something on yoga. I've got somebody lined up to come in and show us some acupressure that can release tension, you know. So do join the group if you haven't already. I know you have, Tanya.
Yes. and you know, I know you don't want to blow your own horn too much, but you also have written a great book that I believe is available, and it's correct me if I'm wrong, 30 ways to meditation or 30 days?
Almost 30 ways to mindfulness.
That's it. Right. Mindfulness.
They're quite closely related, but they're not quite the same thing, because mindfulness is you can have a mindfulness meditation, but you can also have mindfulness without meditation. So mindfulness is about being aware, basically, sort of much more conscious. And it's a very good way of kind of calming yourself down, because a lot of the time we get caught up in all these thoughts in our in our head, you know, worries about the future and so on. And mindfulness is about just becoming really conscious of what you're thinking, feeling, what's happening in the moment. So that could be sitting and meditating, or it might be, you know, just looking at an object, for example, you know, really intently.
Or going for a walk.
Going for a walk. Yes, if you can. Not everyone can at the moment, sadly.
Yes, yes. Well, we're where I am in Canada, we're in the lucky bunch where we are still allowed to actually walk around outside and go to an area of nature.
But yes, certainly nature. I think if you can get into nature, that is a really good way, I think, of calming yourself down. And even if you can't get outside, try and bring the nature in, you know, look after your plants and you can look out of the window. You know, it is quite important. Yes. If you're interested in the book that Tanya just mentioned, then if you go to my website, which is www.life-resourceful.com, you can download a free copy there.
Wonderful. Excellent. And are there any other resources that you go to?
Yes, I think, well, it depends on kind of what I'm needing at the time. I mean, I'm reading a book at the moment because we're actually doing it in there's a book club within the Facebook group called The Compassionate Mind. And I would really recommend that, actually. I'm enjoying it hugely. It's by a guy called Paul Gilbert. And it's sort of, it's quite a big book, but he basically talks about the three systems that I was mentioning, like the drive and threat and the sort of soothing system. And there are lots of practical kind of activities in the book as well to help you develop compassion for yourself, which is ultimately, I think, what we all need at the moment, you know, not to be pushing ourselves so hard. Yeah. And to look after ourselves. And we, you know, people often feel that looking after themselves is a bit self-indulgent, but, you know, we need it because we can't look after anybody else if we're cracking up and burning out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for speaking to me. And we will be listing your resources on our webpage, which will be just underneath the icon for the podcast. And I think it's been a privilege speaking to you. And I'm sure that lots of our listeners will really appreciate the very, very accessible advice that you've given. And this is a really important topic right now. So thank you very much for joining us today, Rachel.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our pleasure. All right. Take care.
Thanks then.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to Rachel for the interview and of course to Tanya as well. If you want to stay in touch with us, then the best thing to do is look for us on social media at TDSIG. That's on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you want to make sure that you get to hear the next episode of this show, then make sure you subscribe to us on your podcast player, where, of course, we would also appreciate a review. Many thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of DevelopPod.